Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is March 15th, 2017. It's Wednesday, and usually Wendy Wilson joins us for the first segment of the program, but I knew today would be an exciting day for the gold and silver markets, and with all the news, so she's going to join us next Wednesday, and I am pleased to spend the next hour with Greg Hunter, who will be joining us today to talk about all the exciting things that are going on, good and bad. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
It is an exciting day. It was an exciting day for gold and silver. You have, as I said, we had to get through the job announcements on Friday, and we had to get through the rate increase today. So we got through both of those, and gold recovered. We're looking at the New York spot price aftermarket up 21.40. Yay! Finally, something to cheer about. Up 1.79% at $1,221. Silver's up 45 cents at $17.40. Platinum was up 17 at $957, and palladium was up 19 at $765. You have the USDX took a beating today, down 1.01 at 100.73. Crude oil was up big 1.12 at $48.84. And the paper markets today, of course, followed through with up 112 points on the Dow at 20,949. And the NASDAQ was up 43, right on 5,900. And the S&P was up 19 at 2385. Let's see. 10-year yield, that dropped big also, down 0.09 at 2.51%. Euro is, of course, up the same amount. The dollar was down at 107. That was up 0.91. European markets were basically unchanged overnight. There was a lot of news going on. You had other central banks. They were scheduled to hold monetary policy meetings this week. You have the UK, Japan, Norway, Indonesia, and Turkey. The central banks of the world are shifting from the general posture of easing monetary policy to one of starting to tighten after several years of extraordinary low interest rates, to say the least. There was a lot of news out today to also affect the markets, and I think most of them have been ignored because everybody was waiting for the Fed numbers. You have U.S. consumer prices. They show the biggest annual increase since 2012. So you have retail sales in February. They post the smallest gain in 6 months. U.S. home builder confidence, that's did rise to the highest level since June of 2005. So a lot of information going on out there. Plus, we have the debt ceiling. This is what we're going to talk to Mr. Hunter about, Greg Hunter about today, the debt ceiling and all the other things going on. And so lots of things. You have the budget coming out on Thursday. I mean, Al.
Yes, Molly.
I need a secretary to help me keep up with all the news.
Well, don't look at me.
No.
I have enough trouble without hiring out to be a secretary.
Well, boy, oh boy, I'll tell you. Who can you depend on, I'll say. But, yeah, there's a lot of news going on we're going to talk about as soon as he joins us. You know, it's the one thing I wanted to mention when Bill Gross, and it's interesting because, you know, the 10-year yield was popping at 260. And he says, you know, you get a trend. You get that 10-year yield breaking and holding above 260, that would break a trend line that has been set since the 80s. So it kind of makes me wonder if that isn't the, you know, the guideline that the Federal Reserve is actually watching to whether they make their decisions to increase rates or not. Because we saw that 10-year yield, you know, pop over that 260 level several times in the past month or so. And Just an observation, Alfred.
Well, it's reading tea leaves in the bottom of somebody's cup, and I don't even know whose cup it is. I think that would be something we should know. Whose cup are they reading when they read the tea leaves, Melody? Do you have any idea? We're left to guess. You know, there's a point about this that economics should be something that you would think is out in the open. It shouldn't be a mystery. You know, who done it? We should be able to look at economic theory, you would suppose, might not be, that may not be correct, but you would think that we could look at economic theory, and you get your book on economics, I get my book on economics, we look at the data, we get the calculator, we make our calculations. We should be able to agree on what's happening in the context of the economic arena. And yet, I don't think we ever do. And the reason is we don't really know. Everybody has an opinion, and some people turn out to be right with their opinion, and maybe that's because they're smart, and maybe it's because they're just lucky. So it's at least a little disturbing that we can't seem to even arrive at fundamentals that we can rely on in economics. I mean, one man's fundamentals are another man's crazy talk.
So. Because it's all rigged. But we now have Greg Hunter joining us, and I'm very pleased to have him join us today. Good afternoon, Greg.
Alfred, Melody.
Oh, Greg.
How you guys doing?
Just fine, given that it's the Ides of March. Have you been a little bit paranoid today because it's the Ides of March?
I think today is Pi and tomorrow is the Ides. 315, the Pi of March, 3.15. And I think tomorrow is the Ides of March. But, yeah, you know, we hit the debt ceiling today, which isn't really being talked about. A lot of people think they'll just raise it, and they may. But how fast will they raise it? How much damage happens before they raise it? They did raise interest rates, and Melanie and I were talking in the pre-interview that, you know, everything's going up. I think the producer price index, Manarino would call me on the phone, said, I figured this is what happened. Gold would go up. They wanted the government to do something, to Fed to do something, make it look like they still had some kahunas on them. And the producer price index, do you realize it was up 300%? The producer price index, the latest one. Not the most recent month. I think it's January.
Which index are we talking about right now?
The producer price index. He said he was talking about the it's up a lot. I think I remember which month he said he was talking about, January or not year over year, but the it's up big time. Inflation is all over up big time.
Yeah, the U.S. cost of living in February rose to the highest level since March of 2012.
Yeah.
It has been climbing, you know. But they just don't report on it. They don't, you know, they don't acknowledge it, and they pull out the core, and so it has been creeping up.
I was surprised that gold did what it did today. Manarino said, I figured gold would go up because it was not enough of a rate increase to really stop the inflation we have. Mm-hmm. Gold's up 22.50 as we speak. The 10-year Treasury is down, believe it or not. And I wonder why it's down. I said, only down, it should have gone up. Well, it should have gone up 25 basis points, right, if that's what they raised the interest rates to. But it's not up. It actually went down a little bit. It was 2.61, and as we speak right now, I'm opening up CNBC, it's 2.504. So it went down, I don't know, 11, 12, 13 basis points, something like that. So it's, I don't know, it's a crazy world we live in, but it's not really a market. I mean, there's no market. So that's why Alfred, you're talking about how, you know, there should be some rules. It shouldn't be a mystery. It is a mystery if they are telling you that there's a market, and in fact, they're juking all the markets. Then it becomes a mystery because that's not really a market. That's not really doing what market forces would normally do.
Which is to discover prices by essentially taking a vote from everybody who's in the market. Some people say the price should be 100. Some people it should be 200, 150, 175. And you average it out, and this is what the market says today. And people...
but when you have a Ponzi scheme going, you're not going to get the real numbers. It's all rigged. It's a Ponzi scheme. And so it isn't economics as usual.
But, and the danger in rigging is that it creates a false confidence. There are people who understand the market is rigged. Government's going to protect it, going to keep the market going up, up, and up. That means, in theory, you can't lose. That means you keep betting and betting and betting and betting on the market going higher. And anybody who thinks about this knows that this has got to turn around one of these days, and it's going to be devastating. When it does, when reality returns, and we can't count on the rigging to hold up to make our investments profitable, what are we going to do?
You know, a year ago, the 10-year Treasury was 1.89%. Well, no, 1.79%. 1.80% a year ago, 1 year ago. It's now 2.5%. That's a big move in a short amount of time. If you look at, towards the end of July, beginning of August, it was 1.46%, and now it's 2.5, roughly 2.5% right now. That's a huge move, and this is with the Fed raising rates only, what, two quarter point moves, 50 basis points, but it's up a whole percentage point. It's up 100 basis points. So the bond market, I guess, is feeling a relief. I don't know. Of course, then again, I'm acting as if it's a real market. Did the plunge protection team get in there and start buying all kinds of treasuries that make this look like it was that interest rates been going backwards when you're raising rates? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But the 2.60% was spooking the bond market, that's for sure. You know, what I was telling somebody the other day is, at what point do people say that all the people that bought, and I'll go 3 years. Let's go back to 3 years. So 2.5% today, and let's see, that was about the exact, that's a little less than it was, at 2.49% in July of 2014. Now, all that debt from July of 2014 all the way to, let's just say, July of 2016, 2 years of 10-year Treasury debt that has lost money. Because, and then if you take a look at all the debt until about October, when it was 1.80, now it's 2.5%. How much pain do the bondholders that bought debt at 1.8, 1.9, 2%, 2.2? At what point do the debt holders of that debt, and this is affecting all debt around the world, what point, at what interest rate do they say, okay, F it, we're out, we're done, I'm done, I'm finished?
Well, you know, Bill Gross, commonly called the bond king, he says that the breaking point is the 2.60. He says if it breaks that and holds above that line, it's going to break a trend line that has been set since the mid-80s sometime. So it's interesting to see that when it gets to that 260, they raise, a quarter point, and, it drops a little bit. It's still high.
Which doesn't really make sense, like Alfred was talking about. And this is just a very good point, Alfred. We make a lot of good points, buddy. But this is another very good point of yours, is that, what is it? I mean, they just raised rates, but they went down? Huh? What?
I understand. It's a brand new world. New World Order. They have, you know what I think the problem is with a lot of this? We have moved from an asset-based currency, which is what we had, at least in part, up until 1971 when Nixon finally closed the gold window and gave us a pure fiat currency. Since then, we have a debt-based monetary system. I suspect that you can't change the currency from an asset-based to a debt-based without causing enormous reversals in economic theory and principles, one thing another like that. I don't think you can treat a debt-based monetary system the same way as an asset-based, and I don't think you can expect it to operate according to the same principles. And I think maybe that's part of the reason we are still operating. People think we have an asset-based monetary system and an asset-based economy, and in fact, it's debt-based. It's all about promises, promises, promises. Can't be kept. I think it changes things. I think it's
more
than
considered. And you and I know, and Melody, we all know that that's total BS. It comes to a point where there's no way they're going to ever pay that back. I mean, hey, back when the government had very low debt back in the 80s, back in even the 90s when the debt was pretty fairly low, $3-4 trillion. They were going to pay that back. That was payable debt. it was debt that was payable, but they just kept rolling it over and running it up and rolling it over and running it up. And you get to a point where you go, oh, come on, this is never going to be paid. And I think that's where we are now. It's just never going to be paid. I had Hugo Salinas Price on. He talked about this cloud of bonds, which, you know, really we didn't print money, we printed bonds, although some of that money gets liquidated and gets into, you know, the stock market and gets into, you know, other places. But when, if you get a mass liquidation, he says that ultimately the bonds will be no good. You might get a rain down of money to begin with, but, you know, if you had to liquidate the 10-year treasury, the most liquid market in the world, as they call it, people say, hey, I want my cash, I've had enough, I want to cash out and go buy something like farmland or diamonds or artwork or stocks or whatever, can they liquidate that whole ball of unpayable debt? And the answer is no, they can't. So at some point, the bonds just turn into, you know, dust.
Yeah, and when they do, what happens to the bonds that are in the bank and in the pension funds? The bank vaults are being used as collateral to justify loans to other people. What happens when those bonds are found to be worthless?
And all the pensions, the latest debacle was the New York Teamsters. They're toast. You know, so what happened in Dallas? You know, to pay all the pensions in Dallas, Texas, in the city of Dallas, you'd have to raise property taxes 130%. What do you suppose the chances of that happening? Zero.
You can raise them, but let's see you collect them.
Catherine Austin Fitz, she had her year in review, was talking about this unpayable. This is what we're talking about, assets, quote-unquote, that aren't really assets, because if you can't pay, it's not an asset, you know. And she said that every family, every household in California owes $93,000 to pay just the pension obligations.
I mean, you know it's not going to be paid. That's the truth of the matter. It won't be paid. Even very few people have that much capital available to them. And those that do are not going to part with it willingly, which means they're not going to get that money, which means the people that are counting on those pensions are in big trouble. If they really need those pensions, they're going to be hurt badly. It's not going to happen.
They're in the biggest bubble of all. They just think, oh, well, they can just raise taxes. Jerry Brown would just raise taxes.
And who's going to wind up being hurt on this? And the big ones are going to be hurt, surprisingly, I think, will be the people who bought the bonds in the first place. It'll be the rich people that are paying this back. They're the ones that are going to pay. Ultimately, they're going to be tasked with paying for the goods and services that the government purchased with the bonds. They thought the government would force the taxpayer to come up with enough money to repay their cash. It's not going to happen. The wealthy people who bought the bonds are going to take the beating, or at least the ones that hold on to the bonds. When we hit that day of accounting, a reckoning, there are going to be a lot of rich people. You can't take the money away from the poor. They don't have any. You can't take it away from the middle class. It's the wealthy that are going to pay for this. And I'm sure that's a surprising. I mean, that idea, that note surprises me, and it probably surprises some other people too. But let's take a break, a couple of commercials. We'll be right back with Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival with our guest Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com for some of the best video interviews available on the internet. USAWatchdog.com. We were talking about bonds before we took a break, and I know that the government's official bond limit right now, we allegedly have about $20 trillion in debt, national debt, which should translate into more or less $20 trillion in U.S. bonds being out there. But some people like John Williams, who you've interviewed more than once, I think that the real unfunded, the real debt liability may be closer to $100 trillion than $20 trillion, the official. And the Congressional Budget Office and Lawrence Kotlikoff, economist Lawrence Kotlikoff, have speculated that including unfunded liabilities, it could exceed $200 trillion.
Lawrence Kotlikoff explained this to me. There's two GAAP accountings. There's the generally accepted accounting principles, and then there's the GAAP, the accounting gap between taxes and liabilities. And he, of course, is at Boston University, and he's no idiot, okay? And he says, listen, this is not some far-out estimate. This is a something that any graduate student would be able to come up with on here's your income stream, here's your confiscation taxes, whatever you want to call it, and here is your liabilities. And he says it's $200 trillion, somewhere in that neighborhood, $200 trillion. And that's just a stunning figure. I mean, that just if you just look at the $20 trillion, I mean, what is our annual budget? It's, I don't know, what do we have, $3 trillion, something like that? We have $240 billion a month coming in, supposedly. But, you know, we are at the absolute, when Reagan took office, it was, I think there was about a $900 billion deficit. When he left, it was a little less than $3 trillion. So he really ran it up pretty high. We don't have that credit in the credit card. We don't have that pad that, America's still great, we have nukes. We don't have the same thing anymore. And I think Trump would be a very different guy. And I want to tell you, I know that, you know, I don't know, I think this is a real departure point this week, even though it's not going to crash this week. This was the Fed was forced into raising rates with pretty weak numbers. I mean, you know, you had the Atlanta Fed, which they didn't explain this, and the people doing Money News wouldn't, and plus if you ask them too hard of a question, they fire you like you know, DaCosta, you know, from the New York, from the Washington, it's Wall Street Journal. You know, what did Atlanta Fed come out and say? We had a 1.3% growth. We revised down to 1.3, and you're raising rates. You think that's you're in a position where you have to raise rates? And I think Trump is going to have success. I hope he is. I hope he's going to bring jobs. You should have heard him. I want to depart here just in a minute. You should have heard him in his speech, which I caught on XM radio. And if you said to somebody who didn't know anything about politics other than, you know, the Democrats are for the workers and the Republicans are for the rich people, okay, that's the myth, the idea. If you didn't know anything about it, you listen to that speech, you didn't know who he was talking, you'd say, who is this? And you'd say, oh, that's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's talking about bringing jobs back. We're not going to have these unfair trade deals. It's stupid. We had an I'm just paraphrasing. I'm giving you the right numbers, though. $800 billion trade deficit. Who did these deals? It's stupid. We had Trans-Pacific Partnership. It was going to be another rape of jobs in America, and it would have. I mean, Obama was over in Vietnam talking about how, hey, this is going to mean jobs for you guys. You sign on to this. He didn't give that speech over here when he was president. And so, you know, he killed all that. He's bringing money back, which is why he's doing all this Goldman stuff, because they're going to bring back what it's at least $2.5 trillion. I get to John, you know, Williams in a minute. At least $2.5 trillion held overseas. And so I think he's going to be I think he's going to have some success, and I think that's going to be translated into a rising interest rate, which could his success could be his undoing. We have so much debt, and of course I'm sure they'll try to blame it on him, but you can't blame 30 years, 70 years of debt, in, you know, debt piling on, you know, and rollover on a guy that's been in office for 6 months or a year, whatever it is. But anyway, the long and short of it is that the Democrats have lost. The rank and file union guys. He's giving a speech to automakers, you know, talking about how we bring these vehicles in from overseas. They won't take our vehicles. We bring them with no tax. He said, "What? You know, that's just absolutely unbelievable. What kind of a stupid deal is that?" And so that's, you know, the Democrats are going to have a hard time, which is why Trump is focusing on this and not the corruption. He's going to have, it's going to come later. His first goal is to work on the economy, work on the jobs. He's going to try to get the economy going as fast as they can. But if we get into a tough situation, and I want to bring this up about a little bit about Donald Trump's history. You know, I don't know if I brought this up before. I don't think I have. I don't think I brought this up. But I was watching television, watching him do the, in the 80s, he became a huge brand. Oh, my gosh. He was dating the hottest women. He was a handsome guy, actually, Donald Trump. He's still pretty handsome. Got a nice head of hair. But anyway, he was dating the hottest women. He was dating models. He was, you know, his original wife was, she was a model, too. She was a pretty girl. He was making tons of money. He was made the Forbes 400 list, and then the 90s came. Remember that when they raised interest rates 1% mm-hmm. overnight? Remember that? He zigged when they zagged, and he got into big trouble. This is in the 90s, and he was a brand by them. It was Trump this and Trump that and Trump Tower and Trump. He started putting his names on buildings, which his daddy never did. And but he, I'll tell you, he was the first. This is what they said in the piece, and he was the first. And there's a meaning, there's an end to the story. He was the first too big to fail. And, you know, he was such a brand that all these people that loaned him money, you know, he basically arranged deals where they didn't sink him. I wonder if he sat there and said something like to, you know, the head of all these bank CEOs saying, hey, listen, you can sink me. You can force me into seven. You can get, you know, pennies on the dollar. You can get diddly squat. But, boy, you're going to take a beating. Whoo! Mm-mm-mm. You are tied to me, and I am a big bad brand. And if I fail, oh, you are going to fail. You are going to pay. Your stock is going to tumble way more than the loss that you had have to write off. So here's what I need.
More money.
And guess what? More he money. Got all this stuff. And, you know, he completely changed his business model, right? He didn't have one business. He has, what, 80 of them, 90 of them, 100 of them, whatever it is. He separates them all. So, if, you know, like compartments on the submarine. So if he takes a hit, he can, you know, shuck it off and move on, like the casinos, right? Mm-hmm. What happened? Did he bankrupt him? No, but he filed bankruptcy. And, you know, he lost those assets. I don't know why he doesn't come out and say, I've said this before on your show, hey, yeah, I took a pie in the face. Yeah, I took a pie in the face. I took a hit. Well, he was able to leverage the bankers to say, listen, if I go down, you're going to take a pounding. And it's all about your perception. And Citigroup or J.P. Morgan or, you know, whoever it is that was loaning him money, right? Or, you know, Chemical Bank back in the day. I don't know who all was loaning him money. Goldman or whoever. So you guys are going to take a hit if I go down. And they didn't let him go down. Well, fast forward to today. You ever hear him talk about he's got $11 billion portfolio? $11 billion, $10 billion, right? Mm-hmm. Have you heard him talk about that? Mm-hmm. And I have very little debt. And so what do they roll out on him? Oh, he owes $685 million. He owes $685 million. Now, you think about this. Let's do a little people math here. Okay, here's a little people math. Let's break that down. Now, to little people, if you just say that without giving any kind of, you know, context, $685 million, that's more than anybody's family and everybody in all the neighborhoods you live in are ever going to make, right? But you got to give it some context. So That's like a guy with a, let's say it's $11 billion, okay? Let's say he has $11 billion in assets, a very little debt. Let's say that's equity. Let's say that's his equity, $11 billion. And then his liability is $680 million. So, well, oh, wow, that's like a guy with a $110,000 house owing $6,800. Now, would you think that was a reckless, crazy man? That he, wait, you got a $110,000 house? Yeah. And how much you own? $6,800. Wow!
Would
you
it would think be
that
surprising that that's
default?
All he owed.
That's all he owes.
No, but I mean, it would be surprising that average American who was in those numbers, it would be surprising that they owed that little.
Correct. It's nothing. He could, hell, he could take a home equity line on his... he could take out a home equity line on his, unbelievable.
Trump Towers.
Yeah, he could do. He could pay that off in a heartbeat. It wouldn't be any problem whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
No problem whatsoever.
No. You know, he's managed money, and he knows,
he
understands money probably better than anybody else has been in the White House in modern times. He, from a practical perspective, how is he going to, how is he going to implement his plan for infrastructure improvement? Is he going to raise taxes or is he going to borrow the money? Some people
well,
say he needs $1 trillion for the infrastructure.
I think you're not thinking about this like a CEO would think about it. Number one, if he gets into bond market trouble, he's going to not do full faith and credit. We're going to reorganize that. And early on in his campaign, I brought this up before, he reorganized. Now think about it now. This is a guy that did this before, and he thinks big. And now he's going to think bigger on an even bigger scale. Okay? So you heard about the EPA losing. They're going to lose 25% of their budget. I think that's just the first cut. I think they're going to be 50%. You heard about the State Department with all the bloated crap they have in there. Well, we have 23 million in, we have more in government than we do in manufacturing. And what does a good CEO do when he finds himself in trouble and his company's in trouble and he's got way more expenses than he has cash flow and he's in deep, what's the first thing that a good CEO does? What's the fastest way you can affect the bottom line?
Get rid of the people.
You're fired.
Yep.
We don't need you. And I'm telling you, he's going to be laying. The Democrats are going to go berserk. Because I've had 8 years of, I just had Scott Uhlinger on. And he's a former CIA guy. And he says, you know what, we have a kind of a counter coup. We just have a, and I've seen this before in Eastern Europe, in Moldavia, in Azerbaijan. And, you know, somebody gets voted out and the old party doesn't want to leave. They want to try to hang on to power. They want to see if they can do, you know, throw them out of power. This is the kind of stuff that's happening now with Obama, what, 3 miles from the White House in his little compound with Valerie Jarrett living with him and Michael, mm-hmm. I mean, Michelle. You know, I mean, that's
a menage a trois for the ages.
Third world countries. And as Trump, the longer he stays in, and they don't have anything. I mean, you have Rachel Maddow with his, I've got his taxes from 1995. We've got his taxes. He's giving a speech about jobs and keeping union jobs and building cars in America. And Rachel Maddow, she's so disconnected. We got his taxes. He's really rich. Did you know he's rich? He didn't do anything wrong. Did you know he paid more taxes than Bernie Sanders? Did you know he's we got his taxes. We had it. This is all they got.
Yeah.
They can't give a speech where they're setting up in front of people who work for a living saying, we're going to protect your jobs, we're going to move manufacturing back to America, we're going to, the trade deals are stupid, we're going to have people build things here and companies that come here and build things, we love them too, he said. You know, a foreign company that come here and make things, we're going to love them too, we're going to respect them. And he's telling about you, the workers should be respected. You know, things are changing for the worker now. You should be respected. Have you heard a Democrat talk like that?
No.
Not at all.
No, the only thing you can expect out of the Democrat is a promise of more unearned benefits.
This is what the Democrats used to stand for. How does it help black people? And Coretta Scott Keene brought this up. How does it help black people, citizens of America, to flood the country with foreign workers to compete for them in entry-level jobs? How does that help wages? How does that help African Americans? How does that help poor white people? How does that help Hispanic citizens who are already here, who are citizens? We had a bunch of Spanish people who are bona fide American citizens. How does that help any of those people? It doesn't. Oh, you're a xenophobe. Oh, you're not tolerant. Oh, that's another scam. You're not tolerant. You mean if I don't agree with you, I'm not tolerant? Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm not buying it. No, I'm not biting in on that. You know, this whole idea about undocumented, this is unbelievable. When I was at CNN, they put out a memo saying, we're not going to say illegal alien or illegal immigrant. We're going to say undocumented. You look up in IRS. There is no undocumented term in the IRS. There is illegal immigrant, but there's no undocumented, like it's an accounting problem. That is fake news. That is a scam. That is a scam. That is a political play. That is to hoodwink people in America to think that these are just hardworking people. They just came here illegally, and they're cashing in benefits, and they're being arrested at a much higher rate. Ann Coulter says you couldn't find out the stats for the illegal immigrants or immigrants in general arrested, and how much they're arrested, how much what crimes they're committing relative to the general population. Couldn't find that statistic out. And you know, well, there's one report out saying it's $113 billion. That's what it cost us. You know, it's only 2% of these people are picking fruit and out in the fields. Most of them on the welfare rolls.
That's
so
insane.
What is Trump going to do?
Back to that.
He's going to lay off
people. Absolutely self-destructive.
Do you know what else he's going to do? He's going to stop the illegal immigration. Because now you're asking me, where is he going to find the money? Well, number one, he's going to lay off millions of government workers. Number two, he's going to deport and stop the illegal immigration and save billions of dollars there. That's a cost-cutting thing. What he's doing is really, if you look at it, it's not xenophobic, it's not mean-spirited, it's a cost-cutting play by Donald Trump. That's really all it is. He's just cutting expenses. And that's how he's going to do it. That's in part how he's going to do it. Also, foreign aid. I mean, Scott Uhlinger, the guy that I just had on, says, you know, they say it's only a few percent of our budget. He says, oh, no, they're lying. It's way more than that. I think they should curtail foreign aid drastically.
Well, what about our involvement? I mean, Trump is also plans to upgrade the military dramatically. And does he anticipate just keeping them here at home, or is he increasing the military in expectation that we're going to be involved in some more foreign wars?
We may be involved in some more foreign wars. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we have lots going on. We've deployed the THAAD missile system. In the process of deploying Japan and South Korea. China is going berserk. I don't know exactly what they're going to be doing. That is the wildest of wild cards. Then you have Iran, which there is no deal. Every time I hear them say the Iran deal, they stop. There's no deal. It's an agreement. It's a wink. It's a hope. It's not a deal with no signatures by anybody. And Mike Pompeo, the now head of the CIA, who is a congressman from Kansas, found that out from the Kerry State Department. They wrote him a letter, put him in writing, and said, yeah, no, we don't have anything signed. There's no deal. So that's, I don't care what they want to call it, it's not a deal. Deals are signed, especially when they involve giving somebody back $150 billion of their money. You know, deals are signed, and that one is not signed. So that is a hot spot. We're also sending a couple thousand more troops, and this is the mission creep of the Middle East back into, Syria. We're sending them into Syria to take out ISIS. I think he's going to make good on his promises. He's going to take out ISIS. The problem with that is what happens after we take out ISIS, and then you have the Russians and the Iranians, who apparently the Iranians would like to have a port now, just like the Russians, on the Syrian coast. Russia's
well, let's discuss that when we get back from our commercial break. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival with our guest Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival with our guest Greg Hunter from USA.watchdog.com. We're talking about the Middle East when we broke, and you were discussing Syria.
Yes, Syria, where it's pretty much a proven fact. I mean, that the oil from ISIS was being sold through Turkey, our NATO ally. That the U.S. spent, what, how much, $500 million to train five people? I kid you not, five. One, yeah, two, three, yeah. Four, five. Five. You know, like all the fingers on your one hand, finger and four fingers and one thumb. $500 million, and that to think that this
it's only $100 million per person.
Yes, the thing of this is farce of an idea that there's a free Syrian army, that there are moderate rebels. Listen, they killed all. Maybe at one time there were some moderate rebels. But listen, ISIS was killing. Remember that a couple of years ago they were killing ISIS because you know they just weren't crazy enough. They weren't on the program. They weren't Islamic enough. They were killing ISIS. The ISIS was killing Al Qaeda. So listen, stop, please, stop. This is not the Free Syrian Army. This is ISIS. This is Al Qaeda. That's what this is. And you know, I mean, Turkey was going to go come to blows with the Kurds, which we're backing, which the Kurds are fighting ISIS, and supposedly Turkey's fighting. What a mess that is. And then I want to go back to Korea, though. This is a nuclear armed country now, North Korea. And we have put in this THAAD system, which is I'll give you the acronym. It's THAAD, Terminal High Altitude Area Defense. And when it says terminal, it's when the missile's in the terminal phase, in other words, heading down, terminal, that it shoots it down. And China is going crazy. And remember, in North and South Korea, there was never a peace deal. There was just a demilitarized zone. There was a ceasefire. I mean, you know, could China force U.S. hand and just have the North Koreans, or could the North Koreans do this on their own? Just flood South Korea. I mean, they have a million, 2 million man army. Okay, they have a big army.
Are you saying,
and, you know,
who has,
what would
are
happen
you saying
then?
Who,
would be,
are you saying North Korea has a 2 million man army, or
yes,
are you saying South Korea
army.
Does?
They definitely have a million man army.
Okay.
They definitely have a huge army. They don't have a small army. They have a big army.
Yep.
And you know they have in numbers. K-O-R-E-A-A-R-M-Y-S-I-Z-E. I'll tell you what size it is. Hold on. Bing. I'm sorry. 950,000. A million man army.
All right.
That's Korea's army. That's a big army. That's a lot of people that could get put into a meat grinder. Now, could they just attack? They did that before. Would we be forced to nuke them? I don't know. Who knows? But any of this thing that gets out of control, gets out of hand, you know, we have another attack with, and I'm going to come back to the economy here, that we get some invasion from north to south, or China's not happy with our THAAD system, putting THAAD system over there in South Korea. They're not happy about all that. And also now Japan. It may take a year to put in Japan, but I wouldn't think they would be that long. But China's upset. And, you know, we also have this whole big divisive thing in the South China Sea where they've taken 600 square miles and built islands and militarized it. So, you know, that's a big problem in the world. That's a huge problem in the world. And our ally, Japan, is sitting there, you know, right off their coastline in South Korea as well. And, you know, this is a real problem area in the world. Maybe more so even than the Middle East, although we're sliding back into the Middle East. I mean, is Trump thinking that he could go in there? And now they want even more troops to be sent back into Afghanistan. So we're mission creeping, sliding, you know, back into the Middle East, Afghanistan, Syria. You know, there's a lot of moving parts here. And if we have some kind of a real blow up or some kind of a terror attack where then we have Eastern Europe, you know, where we're putting Patriot missiles in Eastern Europe, and the possibility of nuclear warheads in Romania, that's the way Russia sees it. We've got a real fluid chessboard that could blow up, and I think the economy is so weak that if we get a war, we get even a regional war, we even get a situation where, you know, the U.S. has to come in and help South Korea or has to nuke somebody, heaven forbid, to stop an attack. Oh, boy. I mean, the economy is going to go into the tank so fast it's going to make your head spin. I mean, and this is why they're manipulating it. And back to your thing about the markets being manipulated. Hey, they're manipulating it for a reason, because it can't stand on its own two feet. Yep. Without it completely resetting and repricing and letting market forces reprice everything, which would, a lot of stuff would be a lot lower, and some stuff, I think gold and silver, would be a lot higher. The bonds would crash. There's no way they're paying any of that. We're just under the illusion that they're going to pay this debt someday, that it's okay. We'll grow our way out of it, as they keep telling us, but it won't happen. Mm-hmm. You know, it won't. It's just not going to happen. So there's a lot of moving parts out there, and you know,
are we facing these increased foreign instability? Is that a function of the United States having run out of gas as the world's policeman? We are not playing the same role as with the same conviction we once did. Has that allowed these local problems to fester?
Well, that costs money.
No.
We have spent a lot of treasure and a lot of money. And what is one of the things that Trump's been saying on the campaign trail? I want to go back to him. And nobody wants to say this. We spent how much? $3 trillion? $4 trillion? $5 trillion? We could have rebuilt America's infrastructure four or five times over. I mean, you know, I'm sure that the military industrial complex and the war hawks and whatever, you bring out this, the simple numbers for people to understand. Oh my gosh. Shut up. You know, we got nothing out of that. Really, nothing. Man, that's
yeah,
why
I agree.
You know,
so what is the purpose behind it? Is the purpose just to run up more debt? Is the purpose to sell more bombs and missiles to support military-industrial complex? What are we really doing?
Are they
over
trying
there?
To crash America is what I would say. I mean, you know, Dr. Michael Savage has a new book out. He's talking about the war that's going on right now. We are basically in a civil war right now. Yeah. And, you know, once I would love to crash the economy, you know, to take control of it.
Yep.
I mean, what's the first thing that Castro did when he took over down in Cuba? They had a health system, but no, now you get it from the government. You know, what are the Rhino Republicans doing? Still keeping their hand in the till to control the damn health care. We can't let these people go without insurance. I'm reading in the newspaper about 14 million people will just opt out. They're just not going to buy it. Well, we have to give them insurance. Why? Why do we have to give something to somebody that won't buy it, that won't give up their smartphone? And Michael Savage was talking about how they should have high-risk pools. I mean, if you've had a bunch of DUIs and a bunch of accidents, I mean, you have to pay more money. You're in a higher-risk pool. You can get insurance. You just got to pay more for it. which also makes you be a lot more careful because, you know, you don't want to use that, and maybe you can get your insurance premiums to go down and get out of that pool. But, you know, people that in high-risk pools should pay more money. That's all there's to it.
Well,
people
what the government wants
pay
to
lower
do,
money,
in
lower
my
amount.
Opinion, aren't they trying to push the entitlement mentality? We have entitlements. We have programs in government, entitlement. What that means is here's money for people that haven't actually earned it. We're going to give them some money and say you're entitled. The same thing is going on with
you.
This mentality. We've got to provide insurance. Why?
That's right.
Why are people entitled to things that they haven't earned themselves? I mean, I understand charity, but it's not the same thing as what they're doing. They're saying, we're going to take money from Greg, and we're going to give it to some guy down the street who doesn't have a job. Well, there's a certain amount of humanity in that, but is it good policy?
And the answer is no.
No, I don't think so.
It's not good policy, especially when we're at the end of our, you know, money printing ability, at the end of our ability to have very, very cheap debt, to pile the debt on at a very cheap rate. And that is, you know, we've seen the low. Anybody who thinks we haven't, we've seen the low. And like Melody brought up about PIMCO, you know, he was talking about Jim Bill Gross talking about where he had some quote last week that we were, you know, we're on a we have a truck full of nitroglycerin and we're on a very bumpy road.
Yeah, right.
it's not going to smooth out anytime soon.
What do you see for the balance of 2017? What do the people you're talking to and interviewing, where do they see this year? How do they see this year working out?
Even Catherine Austin Fitz doesn't think that we're going to make it out of here without a big reset, without some sort of calamity.
This year.
We could. There's going to be some pain. And that's always to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you're going to be able to reset the economy and everybody keep all their stuff and keep all their benefits and keep all their pensions, that ain't going to happen. And there's been some people that have made predictions, about this. Charles Nenner says he thinks it's 2017, the fall of 2017. He said that at the beginning of this year or the end of last year. He says it won't be. Well, actually, he said there wouldn't be a crash in 2016. He was right. We did have a crash the day Trump was elected on the 8th, you know, overnight, the 9th of November. We had a limit down in the S&P, but they stopped that. And, you know, Charles Denner, the great market timer, the great, brilliant guy, he says it'd be 2017. If you're not positioned correctly, you're going to get creamed. And he's talking about buying things. He's talking about buying apartments and houses. And, yes, it might go down in price, but you'll still have the asset. You know, some of this stuff, the bonds, it's just going to go poof. I mean, there's no John Williams, back to him, he said that we have, 16, at least 16 trillion held outside of the United States. What happens if that ball of junk tries to liquidate? You know, do we liquidate $1 trillion, $2 trillion, $3 trillion? How much do we liquidate before Donald Trump calls over to Steve Mnuchin and says, stop liquidating, stop it. We're going to have to make these people hold us to maturity. Sorry. And that's going to be a debt reorganization. And that's back to what Trump's going to do. The full
and what is a debt reorganization
credit,
other than a
your
default?
Treasury. I mean, can you imagine what would happen at that moment? I mean, that we have to stop a hyperinflation, because Trump's not going to do the New World Order thing. He's going to he thinks the dollar's too big, so he wants inflation. Hello, everybody that's listening, thinking about a hedge against inflation. You know, he thinks the dollar's too heavy. And incidentally, Melody, your little deal on my thing, where you sent out, I sent out an email blast for you where you had, you know, quarter ounces and half ounce in ounces of silver. A friend of mine, unsolicited, 2 weeks ago, or they mean last week or 2 weeks ago, said, "Hey, man, I want to just tell you, man, I'm on your email list." I said, "Yes," and I didn't ask him for this. I didn't even know he was on the list. I thought, "Oh, you're on the list. Oh, okay." He said, "Hey, that deal that your gold person sent out, yeah, Melody at Discount Gold and Silver Trading, yes. That, you know, buying quarter ounces for the same price as a 1 ounce gold coin, the same commissions, that was a stone cold deal, buddy. Hope you're going to do that again sometime."
We're going to try, and hopefully it'll be soon.
That was a stone cold deal.
Yep.
That really was a stone cold deal, because that way you don't have to worry about, well, you know, I've only got an ounce of gold, I don't want to take, oh yeah, you get a quarter ounce. I mean, or buy a roll of silver, or buy both. So anyway, I think Trump, if he, and David Stockman said this, I don't know if you saw this, and David Stockman said, you know, he started talking about what it was like in the Reagan administration. I want to just give you this, we're almost out. He said, you know, we only had $900 billion of debt in the Reagan administration. There's a lot of room to run, a lot of credit on the credit card. We don't have that now. We got $20 trillion, and we've hard stopped. We're going to hard stop today, as a matter of fact, the 15th. Tomorrow is the first day that we don't have it. We hard stop into the debt ceiling. That means no more $20 trillion. That's it. A lot of people aren't going to want to vote for this. Imagine the deficit hawks that are going to spring up on the Democratic side. And there's already deficit hawks on the Republican side, not wanting to raise this. And then you have this quarter point rise, and then if you want to go ahead and raise it, and we're going to have more debt, and we're in a rising interest rate environment, how are they going to pay for that? Oh my gosh! Well, you know, they can do it like Peter Schiff says. They can do it. They can just default on stuff. But he said, I think they'll do it the politically expedient way, and they'll just print money, which is going to be, you know, massive amounts of currency chasing, you know, a finite amount of goods, which is inflation. So. That's what I think. And Trump,
inflation and perhaps hyperinflation. That's when
a
currency dies. If they move into hyperinflation, the dollar is going to be history. What have we got? A minute left?
We couldn't have a better person in the White House than Donald Trump. I mean, Hillary Clinton would have been a disaster. I mean, there are limits on the Second Amendment. Chris Wallace, he said, dude, there are limits on the First Amendment, too. Oh, really? You'd shut down, you know, Melody Cedarstrom and Alfred Adask, right? You'd shut them down? Anybody else that would tell the truth? I'm so happy we don't have her. But Trump couldn't be a better person. We could not have a better businessman president that understands what it would take to reorganize this and bring us out of this.
You think he'll be recognized as a great president before this is done?
Yes, he will be recognized as better than Reagan. Something like he may be, if he can hold together, God the Father, I think, put him in. There's a divine, intervention here. God the Father put him in. And we are Israel. The United States is Israel.
Well, I understand. I understand that argument. But I'll tell you what, we're going to have to let it go for another time, Greg, because we are out of time. Thanks very much for being on the program. Always enjoy listening to what you have to say, hearing what your guests have told you in your interviews. I want to thank all you folks for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Greg Hunter, and Todd, our producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.